live from the downtown studio. The Flames Talk postgame show starts now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Okay, let's get tonight's Flames Talk postgame show underway. Final score, Flames fall 4-2 in Vancouver. And let's go immediately back to Rogers Arena and check in with Flames forward A.J. Greer for some immediate postgame reaction. A.J., a hard-fought one. Just overall, how'd you see this one for your group tonight?
We had a slow start. I think first period wasn't our best at all, and we came out flat-footed. They took it to us, and especially a team in their nature, they're known to have good, strong starts. They're leading the league in first period goals, so we didn't come out playing Flames hockey, and we had to catch up after that. And then, you know, Marky bailed us out a couple times, but it just comes down to better decision making and really just, you know, moving our feet and not being predictable. And I thought that we were predictable tonight. It's unfortunate, but you know, we definitely have better to give.
How'd you like the way that the group kind of pushed back and made this pretty interesting in the final 40 minutes?
Yeah, it's nice to see the pushback, but again, it's not good enough. In this league, yeah, you can't be playing from behind. And, you know, we can talk about the positives, whatever, but with the position that we're in and what we're trying to accomplish, trying to make playoffs, it's not good enough. And that's really just, is it?
AJ, the line with you, Kevin Rooney, and Dryden Hunt seems to have shown some nice chemistry over the last couple of games. What about the three of you playing together have you liked?
Yeah, I think we complement each other well. I didn't like my first period at all, sloppy and not making right plays. So I think I just we came together and we kind of had a little talk in between periods and just, you know, focused on just getting better. And I thought that the second and third period were really good. We were moving our feet, getting pucks deep, pounding them, and then winning our battles, and then just, you know, staying on top of the puck in the ozone. We spent a majority of the game in the ozone, and we created chances, and we were fortunate enough to get some bounces and you know, get a couple goals on our line. But, yeah, I thought that we did really well, and I think you get a little bit of best of everything on that line. You know, I bring the energy and try to, you know, hound pucks and be good down low and be in front of the net. Huntsy's a really good skill forward, and he can kind of play a little bit everywhere, you can see in the lineup. So, and then you got Kevin Rooney, who wins draws and is just a very good two-way centerman. So I really like playing with those guys. We have some good chemistry, and I'm looking to build off of that tomorrow, but we need that win. It's crucial.
Hey, Jan, that's the last thought, and maybe you can just expand on that. How important is it to bounce back on Sunday night against Buffalo?
Yeah, especially in front of our crowd. It's really, really important that we come off strong, and you know, we got some traveling to do, but we're pros, and we just have to reset. And going forward, we cannot miss any opportunities to win any games. So we just got to bear down, and we have to get the best from everyone. And I think that that's definitely going to be a wake-up call from tonight, and we're going to come out flying tomorrow.
AJ, really appreciate the time. Fly safe, and good luck on Sunday against Buffalo. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, guys.
That is AJ Greer post-game following a Flames 4-2 loss on the road in Vancouver. Flames will be back in Calgary Sunday night to take on the Buffalo Sabres. Our Flames Talk postgame show is underway on this Saturday night. It's Pat Steinberg along with you, Megan Mickelson, and Derek Wills along with us as well. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can call now at 403-240-4444 or text now at 960-960. Lots to get to on this Saturday night. But, Mick, a hard-fought game, no questions asked. The Flames' work ethic and compete level was where you'd want it to be, but the execution a little off. Slow start, as A.J. Greer told us just a few minutes ago, and in the end just weren't able to find a way to tie the game at any point. And that Canucks skill level just a little bit too much for him tonight.
Yeah, and that was a key coming into this game for the Flames, was making sure that after the week that they've had, haven't played since Monday, they had two full days off away from the rink and then two practice days. But when you haven't played in a while, you need to make sure that you have a strong start, and they didn't have that. But there's one thing that I think we've all learned never to question with this group, and that's their work ethic. And we saw that again just in the pushback that you saw from the group. But, I mean, the Canucks are – they're obviously – they're one of the best teams in the NHL, if not the best, for a reason. And they really don't give up a lot in the middle of the ice, and the Flames just couldn't get to the inside more and generate more. But for me, it was that power play goal from JT Miller that kind of ended the game. And Oliver Shillington, obviously that was a tough bounce as a defenseman when a puck is bouncing like that coming out you and you have pressure right on top of you and then it goes by. That's a tough play. So a feel for Oliver Shillington on that bounce. And yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. Every single game that they lose right now is tough. But at the end of the day, they're trying to really create a culture that will set them up for next season.
Yeah, obviously the Flames didn't play a perfect game, but I also don't think they played a bad game against a really good Canucks team that has been one of the best teams in the NHL so far this season. And again, coming off a four-day break, they looked a little bit rusty early in the game, and the Canucks scored on the first shot 48 seconds in. But then I thought the Flames kind of settled in after that, and the Canucks were the more opportunistic of the two teams tonight. And when you're playing against a really good team that has more talent than you do, sometimes that's going to happen. So, you know, the Flames' work ethic, I don't think, can be questioned tonight. At times, their execution wasn't where it needed to be, and the Canucks are a talented enough team to make it pay for that. So, not a bad game, not the right result, but after a four-day break between games, they're right back at it. Chance to bounce back on home ice against the Sabres tomorrow.
Yeah, and that you heard it there from A.J. Greer. They want to bounce back and have a better effort against the Buffalo Sabres on Sunday night as the Flames, with this loss, kick off a stretch of four games in six nights. They're in Vancouver, home to take on the Sabres. Then they travel to Chicago Monday, play the Hawks on Tuesday, travel to St. Louis, and then play the Blues on Thursday. It's going to be and then back for a Saturday game against the LA Kings. It's like another five-game road trip they're about to go out on.
What a stupid schedule. Yeah. So they play seven games in 12 days, have a four-day break between games, and now they're going to play four games in 6 days.
Yep. Yeah.
Couldn't spread that out a little bit more?
Travel.
5-8, too.
Holy smokes.
And 5-8 with travel between every single game. Strange schedule.
And even the trip from Vancouver to Calgary isn't as easy as people think.
No, you lose an hour coming back.
You lose an hour, plus it's about a 40-minute bus ride to get from Rogers Arena to the airport. Then you got to get on the plane and get back. So, yeah, it's going to be a late night for the Flames, and I don't think they're having a morning skate tomorrow.
No.
So the guys will be able to sleep in a little bit at least.
Well, the Buffalo Sabres have been here since, Thursday night after the game in Edmonton, too. So they're all tucked in and going to bed right now, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure they're tucked in. Yeah. Probably going to get up early and go to church, too.
Yeah, but you know what? It's a Sunday game tradition.
Score. That's coming from an athlete that prioritizes rest.
Oh, yeah, well. Look, that's why you've got all those gold medals, Mick.
Nobody knows how to sleep better than Megan Mickelson. That is,
sleeper.
You know, you were an elite high-level Olympic athlete, but I think that pales in comparison to your elite high-level ability to sleep at any point of the day.
If sleeping were an Olympic sport,
You'd be a multiple
gold
medals.
You could go win some more
there.
Medals.
I would say if napping were an Olympic sport.
Yes. Yeah. Marquee matchup tonight brought
right
to you by
–
well, I mean, that's the type of season. That's the way things
time
are
of the year.
Marquee matchup brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. We were looking at Elias Lindholm's first game against the Flames. Didn't really factor in. He scored the goal, which was an empty netter, snapped a 14-game goalless drought. You know, his line was a fairly large non-factor in the game. However, I will say he did win 73% of his draws, going 8-for-11 in the faceoff dot, which definitely help Vancouver tonight. So Elias Lindholm's first game back against the Flames. He'll play a second one later on this season when the Flames return to Vancouver, but won't be until next season when Elias makes his first trip to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Let's select tonight's hardest working Flame, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Are you the hardest working plumber or HVAC tech? Canyon is hiring. Send resumes to jobs@canyonplumbing.com. Mick, which way are you leaning on tonight's hardest working Flame?
I'm going to give this one to Joel Hanley. I thought that, you know, for a guy who he doesn't play a ton of minutes, played 13:03 tonight, scored a goal, obviously, but I really liked he played 45 seconds on the penalty kill, but it seems like he played a lot more on the kill for some of the plays that he made. I thought he was excellent on the penalty kill, and he's the type of defenseman where if you don't notice him, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And really didn't notice him much in this game at all. So Joel Hanley gets it tonight.
Joel Hanley is your hardest working Flame, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Want to get recognized and rewarded for your achievements? Learn from the best. Send your resume to jobs at canyonplumbing.com. Next up is the Buffalo Sabres on Sunday night. It's a 7 o'clock faceoff at the Scotiabank Saddledome, so a quick turnaround for the Flames. We're expecting Dustin Wolf to get the start in net against Buffalo on Sunday. So that is what's coming up next for the Flames. We'll hear from head coach Ryan Huska here very shortly. Before we do that, though, let's get some final thoughts from our broadcast duo of Derek and Megan, starting with Mick.
Yeah, that's a tough one, and give the Flames credit for, you know, going up against one of the best teams in the NHL. So, I mean, I don't fault their work ethic. I'll fault their slow start.
It's getting late. We're all tired, clearly.
Anyways, as I was saying, their slow start. I think that's what, you know, being down one that early on and being down as often as they were in this game against such a strong team. I mean, that's a tough game to play when you're chasing the entire time. So definitely a tough one, but it's a quick turnaround to tomorrow. So one they have to forget quickly and move on.
I'm not going to focus on the game. I'm going to focus on kind of the big picture for this team, because I do think there are some similarities. Now, I'm going to preface what I'm about to say by adding that the Flames do not have Quinn Hughes or Elias Pettersson, mm-hmm. okay? But the Canucks finished 22nd overall last season and kind of retooled on the fly. So, you know, they trade Bo Horvat, and they get a first-round pick, and then they flip that and bring in Filip Hronek, who's been a first-pairing defense, been playing on a pairing with Quinn Hughes this season, and is having a career year. So the Canucks go from being 22nd overall last season to second overall this season. I'm not saying the Flames, who are 22nd overall right now, are going to go from where they are to second overall and in the fight for a President's Trophy next season. But I just think that it's going to be such an interesting offseason, because Craig Conroy has accumulated 24 draft picks in the next 3 years, including a bunch of first-rounders. Mm-hmm. What will he do with them? Will he draft players and develop them? Or will he use some of those picks to flip for NHL players to help this team retool instead of rebuild? So I just look at the Canucks as a team that wasn't where they wanted to be or needed to be. They made a coaching change last season, and in year two, they have really played well for Rick Tocchet. Well, Ryan Huska is going to be going into year two. Mm-hmm. And I think he's, along with the management group and the coaching staff and the leadership group, really building the right culture, building the right habits, developing young players. So let's see what happens during the offseason, because I'm not convinced that the Flames can't be competitive and fight for a playoff spot next season, because I just look at what the Canucks did last season and then during the offseason and at all the success they've had so far this season. And I just wonder where things go for the Flames.
We will see you two on Sunday afternoon, evening, whenever we see each other on
see
Sunday.
Tomorrow.
Yes, we'll see you tomorrow for sure. Bye, friends.
Good night.
Megan and Derek signing off on this Saturday night following a 4-2 Flames loss to the Vancouver Canucks. This is your Flames Talk postgame show on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's go back to Rogers Arena right now and check in with head coach Ryan Huska. His postgame thoughts following a 4-2 loss to the Canucks.
Rasmus said he felt you guys kind of found your way into the game after about 10 minutes, but just weren't able to capitalize on some of those chances, especially in the third.
Yeah, I thought we played a good road game. Like, we had a poor read on their first goal early in the game, and I thought after the first 5-6 minutes we settled in and played a pretty good road game. We just, our finish on those situations or those chances wasn't there for us tonight, and they scored on the power play and we didn't.
I mean, a couple of posts in there too. Did you see it as more, you know, not taking advantage of the opportunities, or were they getting in some shot lanes there too as well?
They did a good job of that for sure. There was, you know, situations where I thought we were in shooting areas that went off a stick or off a foot. And that's part of what they did for sure. Yeah.
When you look at the way it finishes, they get their power play goal obviously late, and you guys go for two. Do you see that as kind of a bit difference in a game that's this close?
Absolutely. That's always the difference. Your penalty kill, power play, when you're playing tight checking games and there's not a lot of room on the ice, that will be the difference almost 100% of the time.
Lessons in how well you guys handled the tight checking game, like positives?
No. It's something we've done, I feel like, for a lot of the year. These are games that you want to find a way to win, you know. So we got a late goal in the second period, and you want to build on some of that momentum, and we weren't able to do that tonight.
Did you feel like you did build on it, you just couldn't score?
Couldn't score. Yeah. That was part of it for sure, and that's situations where you would like to see that finish. You know, when you have an opportunity on the road, when you're happy with the way you're playing 5-on-5, you'd like to see that finish.
Goal side looked like you got some good minutes from that fourth line here tonight.
They played well. I thought they did some good things on the forecheck, and Kevin Rooney, I thought, was maybe one of his better games he's played for us this year. So that line as a whole, I thought, gave us a good game.
Just that moving their feet, kind of creating some turnovers?
Moving their feet. They were hard on the forecheck, and they get into bodies, and that's something that is important for our team because they're the guys that do that, you know, and if they can bring that in the game consistently, then they're hard guys to play against, and it frees up some minutes for some of our other guys as well.
Big stretch for your group, obviously, knowing you got 3 and 4 nights here, but just about kind of resetting and getting ready again tomorrow night.
And that's it. I mean, every team goes through back-to-backs. We're no different, so you turn the page pretty quickly and you make sure you're ready to play tomorrow.
Okay, thanks, Josh. Okay,
thank you, guys.
There you go. That is head coach Ryan Huska post-game in Vancouver following a 4-2 loss to the Canucks. Tonight's game has been brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. The phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. The text line open at 960-960. Give us a call. Fire us a text. We'd love to hear from you on this Saturday night. Next up for the Flames, Sunday against the Buffalo Sabres. So not a lot of time to reset. They will take on the Sabres Sunday at 7 o'clock, and we've got lots to do. Our Flames Talk post-game show is available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on a Saturday night. This is Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Flames Talk post-game show continues from the downtown studio on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, your final score at Rogers Arena in Vancouver. The Flames fall 4-2 to the Vancouver Canucks, and that is game 3 of this year's 4-game season series. They'll play once more at Rogers Arena before the end of the regular season. The Flames will continue their year and continue this little stretch. 13 games to go this regular season. They're back at home Sunday night to take on the Buffalo Sabres. Our Flames Talk post-game show continues. We're on Apple and Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. I got one line open if you want to jump in, but do have some folks on hold already. The text line's open as well at 960-960. We'll get there very shortly. Look out, the Flames played a pretty solid game. They worked hard. The compete level was there. I think that's, you know, for a team that is, let's be perfectly honest, let's face facts. The Flames are playing out the string. They're going to fall, in fact, have fallen 12 points out of a playoff spot. A Vegas win at home to Columbus and a Flames loss in Vancouver knocks him 12 back of a playoff spot. They also lost ground on both LA and Nashville, who both won on this Saturday as well. So the playoffs aren't going to happen. I think that we can be certain of that. And, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe they do have some life left in them. Maybe they can make this thing a little bit closer down the stretch. But this is a team that is more than likely playing out the string right now. But they still fight. They still work hard, and I give them a lot of credit for that. You know, I there were a couple of things that you like to see in this game. Obviously, you heard Ryan Huska talking about that fourth line. Greer, Hunt and Rooney played well together. You know, I thought Uyghur and Miramanov had themselves a pretty decent game once again. I thought Huberdeau looked pretty dangerous in this game. Kuzmenko played with some jump. You know, on the other hand, I thought it was a rough first
first half of the game, really rough first of the half of the game for Anderson and Shillington. Thought they really struggled defensively. And the five-man unit of that pairing, Anderson, Shillington, along with the line of Kadri, Zeri, and Pospisil, they got ran over at 5-on-5 in the first 40 minutes by the Pettersson line. Got a little bit better in the third period when Vancouver went into goal, or lead protection mode. But, not a perfect night by any means for the Flames. Some things to work on. We'll see what they do against the Sabres on Sunday. Rasmus Anderson did get better as the game went along. Thought he had a rough first half of the game. Much better second half of the game and really started to exert offensively and apply himself offensively. He scored the 2-1 goal late in the second period. Had a couple of other opportunities. Hit a post. Had a nice little wraparound chance to try to tie the game. Let's hear from Rasmus Anderson post-game inside the Flames locker room.
Rasmus, what do you think of the way that this game kind of develops here tonight?
After the first 10 minutes, I thought we were better and better. We kind of grew into the game as it went. We knew they were coming hot, and we haven't played for a few days either, so maybe that was a little bit in the back of our head. But after the first period, I thought we played well, and we generated enough chances to win, and we have a few great days with a few minutes left, and then they get a power play, and the game's over, kind of. So played well enough to win. If our power play gets one, we're right in it. So it was a tough one.
It seemed like that second goal was almost inevitable in the third period, the way you guys were pressing there.
Their second goal?
You guys were going to get one.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even the third with 10 minutes left. I mean, Shilly makes out of a play on the wall, and we hit the post, and then I walk around the net and hit my own player, and then I think we had some more looks too. So it's frustrating when it doesn't go in, but we're playing a good team, and you got to capitalize against a good team, and we didn't manage to do that today, and just recharge and be ready for tomorrow.
It's one of those games too, like lower shot totals, and obviously there were some chances in offensive zone time, but one where you look at the power play and maybe that ends up being the difference in the few chances you get.
I think one of the reasons too is both teams play well to the structure in their system, and that makes it even more important when you get power plays to bear down. They did. They made a kind of a set play, and obviously a good pre-scout by them. They knew how we were killing, and I knew that shot was going to be there, so it's frustrating because it, especially after the first 10 minutes, I thought we played well enough to win the game.
Just one last one for me. That's when you look. You have a few days off to get ready, obviously, but then back to backs, and it goes right back into kind of that busy schedule. How do you reset and get ready here tomorrow night?
Yeah, as I said, just recharge. We know it's going to be a late night tonight, and get the rest you need, and come ready to play tomorrow. We're playing another good team tomorrow. A lot of skill, and just come ready to play tomorrow.
That is Rasmus Anderson post-game inside the Flames locker room following a 4-2 loss to the Vancouver Canucks. Let's get to tonight's save of the game, brought to you by Shane Holmes. Jacob Markstrom back in net for the Flames tonight after missing 2 weeks with an upper body injury, and Jacob's save of the game came in period number 3.
There's Miller looking for Pettersson in front, misses him. Puck to the right point to Suter. Lays it far side to Pettersson. Whips it across to Miller. They back it up to the blue line. Get it back from Hughes. Step in and center. Suter shoots, and Markstrom makes a terrific stop.
That ends up being one of the 22 stops made by Jacob Markstrom tonight, and that is his save of the game, brought to you by Shane Holmes. For every save a Flames goaltender makes, Shane Holmes makes a donation to Kidsport Calgary. Visit ShaneHolmes.com, the better way to build. I thought Markstrom was fine. I mean, the 1-0, 2-0 goals are both like high-end 10-bell opportunities for Vancouver. Perfect passing play on the Hoglander 1-0 goal. Clear-cut breakaway with a trailer on the 2-0 goal, and an unbelievable move. So tough to really fault him on any of the goals scored tonight, because the JT Miller shot was a perfect tic-tac-toe passing play, and JT Miller's got 90 points on the year and 34 goals. So thought Jacob was fine. Obviously, we're expecting Dustin Wolf to get the start on Sunday. Honestly, it would be silly not to go Dustin Wolf against the Sabres on Sunday, and then regroup, see what they do Tuesday in St. Louis. Okay, let's get to the text line for the first time tonight at 960-960. This says, I don't understand why guys like Greer and Hunt are playing over Coronado. Give the rookies a chance. They're not going to make the playoffs. And that's especially now. I mean, it's 12. Vegas wins, Calgary loses, LA wins, Nashville wins. I mean, they're 12 out with 13 to go. That is as insurmountable looking as it's been all season. And I'm with that texter. And this is not a knock on Dryden Hunt. This is not a knock on AJ Greer. But I think you do have an opportunity to give some younger players an opportunity. There's the word opportunity twice in like 12 seconds, but you have a chance to give some of your younger guys and future important pieces an opportunity, and I think Matt Coronado is one of them. I personally didn't agree with him being scratched tonight, and I really think that Coronado should be in the rest of the way. I think you should see Coronado Sunday against Buffalo. We won't know until warm-up because they're not going to do a morning skate Sunday morning. But I really think that Coronado should be in the rest of the way. You're now in a situation where you can give these players opportunities. And I know winning and losing is still important. I'm not suggesting it's not, even with where they are. But, you know, bigger picture, I believe, and this is just me, Flames may disagree still, and they may disagree until they're mathematically eliminated, but I believe at this stage, the bigger picture should take priority over the right now. We'll see what the Flames do in that respect. This says, perfect game from the Flames. They were competitive, kept the game close, but lost. Keeps them in contention for a better draft pick. Kyle in Citadel says, unfortunate night tonight. A lot of defensive breakdown. So many giveaways, but I'll say this. They didn't quit. It's frustrating to watch as a fan when your team outplays the other team, but they couldn't bury it. I do think Calgary outplayed Vancouver. Just really bad breakdowns that led to their loss. How about Hanley? I think he scored with his eyes closed. Anyways, tough night. I think that I would suggest that the Canucks were the better team through 40 and then went into a pretty nice job of shutting things down in the third period. The Canucks only allowed two slot attempts the entire way in the final 20 minutes. So the Flames pushed. I thought Vancouver was the better team, not by a wide margin, other than the first 5 minutes of the game, not by a wide margin, but I do think Vancouver carried more of the play and had the better of the opportunities through the first 40. And the final 20, the Flames pushed, but Vancouver did a very nice job of keeping them to the outside, suppressing shots, and not getting any opportunities, high-quality scoring opportunities go against them. But I thought who outplayed who, I did think the Flames did a nice job of pushing and staying with it until the end. Joel in Cranston says, Pat, I hope everyone that follows this team sees the failure of the coaching staff. Clearly they got together and made a decision to be a coddling, soft-spoken, more understanding group after punting Daryl Sutter. I predict much more of the mediocrity next year before the coaches are fired as a group. Joel, I wish you would give some examples as to why they are a failure. That's a lot of – I think that, you know, Joel's a regular texter. Joel, I'm guessing you were a fan of Daryl's, and for good reason. It's a hell of a hockey coach. But I wish you'd give some examples as to why they're a failure as opposed to just that. Scotty in Victoria says, honestly, disappointing game overall. Gave up the first goal way too early. Sloppy hockey in the first two. Played better in the first half of the third just for it all to fall apart. Huberdeau looks lost out there. And why does he always have to make the extra pass? Just shoot, my guy. Definitely looked like a pack of lost hyenas out there, not playing cohesively. Playoff hopes are done. Let's focus on next year. You know, I thought Huberdeau had himself a generally dangerous game. I thought that he was impactful. I thought that his line spent a lot of time on the attack. I actually didn't mind Huberdeau tonight. I thought Huberdeau, Sharon Govich, and Kuzmenko was Calgary's second best line or second most effective line. Whereas, obviously, the most effective line, I thought, was the Rooney line, which played a really solid night. The Rooney line ended up being an 84% possession line in this game. At 5-on-5, Rooney, Greer, and Hunt were 11-2 for shot attempts, 4 and against. They outshot the Canucks 6-1 when they were out there. They were on the ice for both goals that the Flames scored and none against. And 2-0 high dangers. They only started 67% of their they only started 33%, rather, of their shifts in the offensive zone. 67% of them were started in the defensive zone. So the Rooney line was the best line, and then the next line that was right there with them was Sharon Govich, Kuzmenko, and Huberdeau. They played a really, really solid game tonight. So I actually didn't mind Huberdeau. Thought he played well. And I thought it was interesting to see how the Canucks decided to set the line matchups. Obviously, with last change, you saw the Canucks decide to put the Lindholm line out against the Huberdeau line a lot. They decided to go the Pettersson line saw a lot of the Kadri line, which left the Backlund line to take on the Miller line. So I thought that against the Lindholm line, the Sharon Govich, Huberdeau, and Kuzmenko line did a nice job. So I actually was far more positive about Huberdeau's game than you were, Scotty, but that's fair. That's fine. This says, is Wolf playing tomorrow? I would assume there would be no reason to not start Dustin Wolf in the second half of a back-to-back after Jacob Markstrom just missed 2 weeks with an injury. It would be hard to wrap your head around a decision like that. So I would be very, very surprised if Dustin Wolf doesn't play on Sunday. This reads, I didn't catch the game tonight, but looks like they at least gave him a good fight. Looking at tomorrow, they've got the Sabres. I'm curious, in the offseason, think they could swing Rasmus Anderson, Connor Zary, Vancouver's first, and Etienne Morin to Buffalo for Owen Power. They got a surplus of young lefties. I'm thinking maybe they could pry one away if he indeed projects as a cornerstone and the Flames give him legit value. That's something I'd look long and hard at from both sides. I mean, that would be amazing. Sure, if I'm the Flames, I'm absolutely trying to get Owen Power. I'm not trying to be dismissive of it. I know that Buffalo's got their surplus of left shot defensemen, and I know they've got a really nice group that they're building around in Buffalo on the blue line, and the Sabres are still fighting for the playoffs. It would be hard for me to see Buffalo letting go and saying goodbye to a guy that they just recently drafted number one overall. He's playing in their top four. He's on their second pairing right now. I don't think that would happen from a Buffalo standpoint, but I can't be 100% on that either. This says, from Andy and Cochran, what a game by the Canucks. Flames were outskated from the puck drop, got outworked in every aspect. DeSmith played better than Markstrom. Anderson's becoming a liability, was on the ice for the two goals against and was out of position. He isn't a legitimate top-pairing D-man. Pospisil played like it was his first NHL game. The Flames made too many passes that cost him a lot of turnovers. Frustrating to see, and we wonder why the Flames aren't a contender and won't be for who knows how long. This comes from Ash, who says, I'm not saying this because he scored, but I thought Hanley was solid today. Didn't like Sharon Govich today as he was too invisible for my liking. I actually didn't mind. I thought Sharon Govich, of the three on that line, was the one that was least noticeable, rather. But I liked the line, and I thought Sharon Govich had some nice stretches at 5-on-5 and on the power play as well. A few more texts before we hit the phone lines for the first time. Good pressure in the third from the Burning Seas. Didn't catch the penalty replay incurred by Shillington. That was a bit of a skid in terms of momentum with sustained pressure. Having to deal with a power play, that can make it happen. That was just bad luck more than anything else for Oliver Shillington. Had to take that penalty once the puck kind of skipped on him. And unfortunately, the Canucks did score on that power play opportunity. Keep your text coming at 960-960. Would love to hear from you following a Flames 4-2 loss on the road in Vancouver. Let's get to the phone lines for the first time tonight at 403-240-4444. Got one line open right now if you'd like to chat. This is your Flames Talk postgame show on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Pat Steinberg, and George is kicking us off on the phone lines tonight. What's up, George?
Not much, Patty. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay, man.
Good. Before we even get started tonight, I wanted to commend you and really compliment you guys on your chat with Lanny McDonald on Wednesday. That was 27 minutes of just awesomeness, and I don't think any of us knew how critical his situation was until the article by Eric Francis came out and then your interview. But just excellent work, and I'll say it 1,000 times if I have to. I'm so glad things worked out the way they did. And I am very happy to see, though not surprised, the outpouring of joy, elation, and support that he got, because, I mean, that guy is a Calgary legend. He's a hockey legend. And most importantly, he's just a legend as a human being. I mean, honestly, one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. I can't say enough good things about the man, and I'm just glad everything was okay with him. And I want to thank you guys for that interview, because it was great to listen to.
Well, well said on Lanny, and yeah, that was an awesome chat. It was an absolute privilege to be a part of it.
It was a privilege to listen to it. So good job to everybody involved. What have you thought of AJ Greer? I know it's been a short time. What have you thought of him since he's come back so far? And if you're Calgary, do you offer him a contract to come back for another year, even perhaps two?
I thought that he was okay on Monday against Washington in his first game back. That was his first game back, right? Whatever. I think that was his first game back. Anyway, I thought his first game back he was okay, but kind of just got has just gotten a little bit better. And I thought he was, after a rough first period, Montreal was his first game back. That's right. So I thought it was Montreal that he was just okay in. I thought he was decent, actually quite good, and I thought that line was good against Washington. And after a rough first period where, you know, he had the really bad one play where he put it right onto Brock Besser's stick in the slot, and Besser just missed the low crossbar there. But then I thought that he played much better. So I've liked AJ Greer all season for the most part. He is, like, you know exactly what you're getting from him as a player. And you know that he's always going to bring that work ethic. He's always going to bring that energy. Would I re-sign him? I guess I wouldn't not re-sign him. I don't think it would be priority number one for me, but I think that he's a guy that has shown that he is a good culture guy. He wants to be here, it feels like. I think he's quite grateful for the opportunity that the Flames gave him, claiming him off of waivers. So, I'd think about re-signing him, sure.
Excellent. Conversely, what have you thought about Kevin Rooney? And in my opinion, I think he's been much better than last year. And what do you think is different, or what do you think he's doing different this year to stand out more as opposed to last year?
I think, number one, he came with a little bit of a fresh slate this year. So I think that has been important mindset-wise, even after the injury. I think that's been important mindset-wise. And I do think he had a fresh slate. I think he was in Daryl Sutter's doghouse, which happens. That's how, you know, it's tough to work yourself out of any coach's, like, bad books. Not bad because you're a bad person or anything like that, but just it's tough when a coach forms an opinion on a guy to change that opinion sometimes. And so I think that is what we saw. I don't think that Daryl liked some of the details in Rooney's game last year, and so he went to the American League and didn't come back up after being healthy scratched a lot. Came into this season with a really good approach and a fresh slate, and I think that he has really embraced that, even with the injury that derailed half of his season. Other thing is, I think George, I mean, he's always been decent in the defensive side of the game. He's always been able to hold his own in that regard. But I do think one thing that has been important for Rooney is the fact that I think just the battle level has gotten a little bit better. You know, even the faceoffs have taken a step forward. They're still not great. They're still not outstanding. But I think that his faceoffs taking a little bit of a step forward. Like, he was one of the things that I know Daryl was really not happy about with Rooney's game, was that he did struggle in the faceoff dot and didn't feel like the battle level was where it needed to be. So he's taken almost a full 4% bump in his faceoffs this year. So I think that has helped him. So I think all those things would be reasons why it's been much better for Rooney in year two with the Flames than compared to year one.
Nice. That's all I got for you tonight, my friend. I hope you have a good night, and hopefully we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, Georgie, appreciate it, man. Be well, hey?
Yeah, you too, brother. Have a good night.
Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. Text line open at 960-960. This is your Flames Talk postgame show on a Saturday night. We'd love to hear from you following a 4-2 loss to the Vancouver Canucks. And say hello to Dave. What's going on, Dave?
Oh, not much. I thought they played good. I had about 3 or 4 points to bring up. So how many games has Vegas got left?
Vegas has, I believe, 12 games to go, and the Flames have 13.
Okay, so basically if Vegas goes 7-4-1, it's over for Calgary, right?
7-4-1 would do it. Yep, that would officially eliminate the Flames regardless of what they did down the stretch. The elimination number for Calgary's down to 7.5 or 15 points.
Okay, so, and, I mean, everybody says that it was a bad game by Calgary, but and you got to remember they were playing a very, very good team. I mean, that's probably why they just looked average at best.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a bad game from the Flames. I thought they played hard. I thought they competed. In the end, they got beat by the team that's now tied for number one overall in the NHL. The Rangers and the Canucks have the best points percentages in the NHL at 690. They both have 98 points tied for number one overall. So, you know, I didn't think the Flames played poorly. I really didn't. But they got beat by a team that's better than they are.
Okay, and then my last 2 points is, well, since basically it's over, I think they should probably play Dustin Wolf at least 10 games out of the next 13 just to see what he can do.
I think there's a little bit of a balance that you need to strike there, and I think that balance, Dave, is you do have a veteran in Jacob Markstrom who could very well be your number one goaltender next year, and so I do think Jacob's still a competitor, and I do think you have to take into account that you know, Jacob's got to play his games down the stretch. That in a lot of ways depends on where Jacob is and how he's feeling about things. But I do think that you need to take that into account. They've got 13 left to go. Wolf will almost certainly start Sunday against Buffalo. And I think if you could get Wolf 7 of the last 13, I think that would be a real positive number. And I'm not saying I wouldn't want to see more, but realistically, if you can get 7 for Wolf down the stretch, that would be, I think, a strong number.
Yeah, well, I think maybe 8-5 would be better. You got to really see what the guy can do.
I'd be fine if they did that. Thinking about Jacob as well, feels like, you know, something 8-5, 7-6, what I do think, to your point, that Dustin needs to play a significant chunk of games here down the stretch. You have that opportunity, and I think the Flames would be doing themselves a big-time disservice if they didn't take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah, because we definitely know what Jacob could do, so there's no doubt about that.
Yep.
And a best-case scenario, I really hope Edmonton doesn't do anything. I'd really like to see Vancouver and Winnipeg in this list. I just don't know what happened to Winnipeg the last 2 games. I'm not a Winnipeg fan either, but.
Yeah, so you talk or you read and hear a lot of what Jets fans are saying right now. They feel like maybe their team is getting exposed a little bit to maybe being a little. Now, there's not every Jets fan, but some of them that I've seen online, that Jets fans are a little antsy that maybe Winnipeg is starting to come back down to earth a little bit. Like, they're a good team, don't get me wrong, but it feels like there are some in Jets land who are starting to feel like maybe the group's coming back down to earth at the wrong time. But we'll see how they're able to get things back on track between now and the postseason.
Okay, so how things pan out, though? Obviously, it's probably going to be Vancouver, Colorado for first and second.
In terms of the top two seeds in the West, I mean, Dallas and Winnipeg are all, like, goes Colorado, Dallas, Winnipeg, 95-95-93. So, you know, Vancouver's going to be one of the top two seeds. I think that is... That's most likely. Edmonton is 10 back with three games in hand. So the Oilers aren't completely out of the question for taking the number one seed or taking the top seed in the Pacific. But Vancouver's your betting favorite for sure. But the Central remains completely wide open. So any one of Dallas, Winnipeg, or Colorado could get the one seed in the Central. So that's going to be interesting to watch, Dave.
Yeah, so the last point. So if Colorado does finish second, who are they likely to play then in the wild card?
So are they – okay, when you say second, do you mean second in the conference or second in their division?
Oh, second in the conference, first in their division.
Okay, so if Colorado were to win the division, assuming they finished as the two seed in the West, they'd play Nashville most likely.
Okay, that could be dangerous. But I'd rather see Winnipeg play Dallas in the first round and play Colorado, that's for sure.
Right. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of permutations. Like, if it were to end right now, it would look like this. Vancouver would be playing Vegas. Colorado would be playing Nashville. Dallas would be playing Winnipeg. Edmonton would be playing L.A. for a third straight year.
Yeah, because I think Nashville is a team that could really give them a lot of trouble, just like Seattle did last year for Colorado.
I mean, Nashville's the hottest team in the NHL. We'll see where they are come mid-April, but they're the hottest team in the NHL right now.
Because, I mean, you know, I really hate to see Colorado in there over and over and over again. It just drives you nuts.
They're a pretty good team, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see, Vancouver win if they got it. It wouldn't be good for the TV ratings, I don't think. But
no, it'd be good for TV ratings in this country anyway. I don't know how they would south of the border, but here they'd be good. So we'll see.
It'd be really nice because then we'd have a real good chance of at least having one Canadian team make it to the final.
I could do with that. You know what, Dave? I could do without Vancouver going deep, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. But,
oh, yeah. But, I mean, it'd be better to have either Vancouver or Winnipeg than just two American teams, that's for sure.
But I compared to Edmonton, I think I would still take, I would prefer Vancouver over Edmonton. I'll give you that one.
Oh,
Dave.
Yeah. I mean, Edmonton is one of the teams I think are most disliked if you're in Calgary.
For sure. Okay, Dave, you have yourself a great night, man.
Yeah, thank you, bye.
403-240-4444 is your phone number. Following a Flames 4-2 loss on the road in Vancouver tonight. Give us a call if you want to chat. We'd love to hear from you on this Saturday. Phone lines are open. Couple of lines open now if you want to chat. I know it's late, so we won't force it. But if you want to chat, call now, 403-240-4444. As we say hello to our buddy Parsons. What's going on, Pars?
Hey, Pat. How are you, bud?
I'm okay, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. Before I get into the game, I got a quick question for you about Kuzmenko.
Okay.
And your thoughts about him so far this year. He has 1 year remaining after this year, correct, or no?
Correct.
Okay, so do you think he starts with this team next year, or do you think he's going to make it past the draft?
I think the Flames would be open to flipping him. I just don't know how much of a market there will be for him. You know what I'm saying? Like, it hasn't been what I would call the most seamless fit here. I think the Flames would be open to flipping him and seeing if there's a market there. I just don't know how much of a market there would actually be.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious, like, are you seeing anything in his game? Like, maybe I'm blind, but I don't see a lot of 200. Like, I know he's probably
there really isn't any 200-foot game. I mean, okay, it's a kind of an 80-foot game or a 60-foot game. Yeah. Or like his defensive game is kind of non-existent. It's not a
right.
he competes hard. I think. I don't think that he is poor defensively because he doesn't want. I don't think it's his forte. So that it's an area that is
is a definite downfall in his game, no doubt. And you know, he on the one hand, and you know, I know Derek has made this point before, and I think it's an interesting one. On the one hand, he is a 28-year-old player, so a lot of times, if you're 28 years old, there's not a ton of development left in your game. On the other hand, he is just a second-year NHLer, so maybe there could be something to work with there. I mean, he's got a very, very high level of skill. That is undoubtable. And Parse, I'm telling you, when you watch this guy in warm-up, and I get the opportunity to watch him at warm-up on a regular basis, the guy's skill level is off the charts, what he can do with a puck, what he can do with his stick. So in that respect, I am curious if there is ever, if there's ever something that could just – If there's anything that ever clicks defensively, and if that might turn him into a slightly more effective player. But I do think that we're talking about a guy that is limited in his all-round game. How's that?
No, that's perfect answer. That's kind of where I'm at with him too. So I just, you know, kind of feel like, you know, if he's one of those players that isn't scoring though, like it's...
Agreed.
Not... Yeah.
Agreed. And that's why I don't know what the long-term fit is for Kuzmenko. He's got a year left on his deal. And again, I think the Flames would have been open to flipping him at the deadline, but there just really wasn't a market there. So, and I think they'd be open to flipping him in the off season too, if there's a market. But you know, you're obviously not going to give up assets. You don't need to look at it like a salary dump, right?
Exactly.
So I think, I don't know, I would have been, had it continued on the way that it started, I might have been a little bit more, I don't know, optimistic that he could be a guy that gets some interest in the offseason. But it has not been a seamless fit for him, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, I mean... I know they had a few games or a few days off, but they definitely came out flat. Didn't help their, you know, their situation, but a lot better in the second and third. But, you know, we couldn't finish on a lot of stuff or take advantage of the power play. And, you know, sometimes that's the players in the game, right? Like, we don't have players like, you know, Hughes or Pettersson or JT Miller or Brock Besser, like, you know, just to name a few, and like, you know, the high-end talent. And sometimes, you know, you can put all the work ethic in there all you want, but sometimes talent eventually is going to take over and, you know, seize their opportunities when they present themselves. So, but, you know, what I hope, Pat, the one thing that this team does not do is try to expedite a retool. Like, we have about, what is it, 3-4 years till the new arena. My honest gut tells me, let's just be patient with it. Whatever happens over the course of the next 2 years, just let it happen. Let the chips fall where they may. You know, we have to build this team through the draft. I mean, all those guys I just mentioned for Vancouver, 3 out of the 4 were built through the draft, right?
Yeah.
We need to do that. I don't want to see this, you know, us giving away picks for, you know, B-level players just to be competitive or anything like that. And I can't really see anyone on the market currently that, you know, we would be giving up first for or anything like that. So,
I mean, the only thing that I could, the example that a lot of people have used is the way that Vancouver got Roenick, which I think is a fair example. And what I think is important to point out with that acquisition is that nobody really knew that Roenick was available, right? Like, it wasn't like there was this market for Philip Roenick and Vancouver won a sweepstakes. You know, from the way I understand it, they had talked in the past and then circled back on it, and Detroit was more willing to do it at last year's deadline than maybe they were in that prior offseason. So Something like that, I wouldn't mind them doing. If they could bring in somebody, you're probably not getting a number one center or a number one D on the open market, but if you could bring in somebody that could be a future top line winger or a future top line, you know, number two defenseman and young still, that would be something that I think I could wrap my head around. But otherwise, I think that I'm pretty much on board with you in that I don't think it makes a ton of sense to be getting away from your plan in terms of how you want to do this. Like, I know that in 2015, for instance, the Flames felt like, oh, geez, we just want a playoff round here and – you know, let's go out and see if we can't make this happen quicker than we thought we were going to. And that was the year that they made the Dougie Hamilton move, right? And so I don't know if something like that makes a ton of sense right now. And yeah. And I also think that where I agree with you 100% is stick with your plan. And yeah. if they make the playoffs next year, I still think they should stick with their plan in terms of what they're doing and their overall long-term vision. Don't let that get derailed just because you have some success that maybe you weren't expecting or something like that.
Well, exactly. And, you know, it's a young team, too. I mean, there's a couple of vets sprinkled in there, but the team has to learn how to lose before they will learn how to win. And, I think this is a great opportunity, at least for the next 2 years, just play it out, get stock the cupboards more. We need to do that. And just, you know, let things happen the way that they should happen. And, you know, that's just, and down the stretch here, I hope that Wolf gets a 2-1 in terms of appearances. I know Marky wants to play all the time. He wants to play, but I think even he knows at this point that, you know, he understands the situation, and it's not like we're going for a playoff spot here. So I hope we get Wolf and some other young guys like Coronado, maybe clapped up a little bit too. So, yeah, other than that, man, that's all I got.
All right, Parse. We will talk soon, my friend. Have yourself a great rest of your night, hey?
You too. Take care.
Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. If you want to chat some Flames hockey, you want to talk the game, you want to talk the future, phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. This is your Flames Talk post-game show on a Saturday night. Flames lose 4-2 in Vancouver. We say hello to Anand. What's up, Anand?
Good evening, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, buddy.
Yeah, I just want to first apologize for that Bluetooth issue a couple of days ago, so I just wanted to say that first.
Stuff happens. You never have to apologize for Bluetooth issues. I promise.
All right, sounds good. Okay, good to know. Yeah, another tough odd game, but not the desired result we wanted. But definitely a couple of credits to the blue line defensemen Rasmus Anderson and Joel Hanley getting on the scoreboard. Yeah, a few of the issues we continue seeing from the Flames, definitely one is the slow starts, how the starts have been an issue throughout the year. Sometimes they start really well, and then sometimes they drop the ball on the start. I think that makes the game slow to begin with. And then power play as well. Some games it comes to work, some days not. And then one question for you. So I know the defense pairings look decent tonight, but do you think maybe we can give, since we are talking about already like 12 points out of the playoff picture now, do you think maybe we can give chance to like Nikita Okechuk or Jeremy Poirier coming down the road?
Yeah, and I think it would be, and no knock on Okechuk.
Yeah.
He's a little bit different in that I don't know if he would be, he's a younger guy for sure, but yeah. I don't know if he, you know, he's spent all year in the NHL. I do think it would be good to see him a few more times and probably will. The interesting one that I think I would really like to see at some point is Poirier. And it may not be an end until game 81 or 82 because, yeah, you know, the Wranglers still have to deal with what they're doing and they got a clinch playoff spot. And, you know, you still have veterans on the Flames that need games and all that type of stuff. But I would like to see Poirier at some point. don't know if we see him get like a long, long look, but if he were to get game 81 and 82, that'd be neat to see. And if we could see maybe another of the younger defensemen on the Wranglers get a few games down the stretch, you know, maybe it's Soloviev again, maybe we see another look at Kuznetsov, something like that. I wouldn't mind that. Again, doesn't need to be for the final 13 games, but if you could see a little bit of that between now and the end of the regular season, even as we get into April and towards game 82, I think that would be good to see, and I think it would give some hope and just some excitement to Flames fans right now.
Andre, gotcha. And my one other question for you, so from the current roster we have, what would be your prediction be of how many players could we see out by next season, so like no longer play with the Flames compared to playing with the Flames again next season? Do you have any insight, any thoughts, any guesses?
Like in terms of this roster ahead of next season?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that there might be... Okay, so let's... I think that there's a chance that one or two of the regular goaltenders are not back. So let's say at least one of Markstrom or Vladar, if not both, could be elsewhere next year. On defense, I don't think that there would be a ton of turnover, to be perfectly honest with you. I think most of the blue line would most likely be back. Curious if they look at re-signing Gilbert or not. And at forward, maybe one. I mean, Markstrom's going to be the big one to watch, and maybe we see one other significant move or significant player subtracted at forward, whether that is a Mangiapane or a Kuzmenko, who both entered the final year of a contract. You know, I know there's a lot of talk about should they move on from Nazem Kadri, and you know, Kadri's been an absolute consummate pro this year. But, you know, if there's a desire for him to be on a team that's a little bit closer to winning, I'm sure the Flames could try to oblige a trade. But it's going to be tough with 5 years and $7 million left. So, I don't know. I definitely, NN, it's going to be a lot less turnover this summer than what we've seen over the last, like, 10 months or so.
Okay, gotcha. Fair enough. All right, and then one other question. So since we're now going to talk about draft picks and prospects coming down the road, maybe can you name a couple of players maybe that I should keep an eye on or that should be great for the Flames team moving ahead?
Say that one more time.
Could you maybe name a couple prospects or draft picks, players that are on the board that maybe I should keep an eye out for who have been performing great and could be a great asset for the Flames?
Like at the draft this summer?
Yeah.
Not yet, and I'm just going to be perfectly honest with you. I have not dug in enough on the draft as of yet to – I'm not a prospects expert. I would never, ever pretend to be. So I don't want to start talking as if I am. I'll start digging in on the draft here over the next month and more as we move towards the draft in June. But I don't want to do that yet just because I don't feel credible enough in doing that, and I don't want to spout off about something I'm not – fully comfortable talking about, you know?
Sure, yeah, no worries. I'll fair enough. And just, yeah, finally, a couple points. Yeah, the great interview with Lanny McDonald, that was great. Good job by you and your team. And then I saw your Beer League Hockey interview as well with Sportsnet 960 and the City News interview. So good job on that. And then I also read your article where you featured my question on the Flames, the Sportsnet mailbag. So thanks for that. And last bit, were you able to catch on IPL yesterday? It started yesterday in cricket.
I was not. We had our beer league broadcast on Friday, so I wasn't able to. So I haven't yet, but I'll make sure that I'll make sure that I pay attention this year.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. Alder, thank you so much, Brett. Have a good night. And, yeah, talk to you tomorrow evening once we play the Buffalo Sabres.
Okay, you be well. Thanks, Anna, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, have a good night. Take it.
The phone lines remain open at 403-240-4444 as the Flames fall 4-2 in Vancouver. It is Steinberg along with you on your Flames Talk post-game show. Got a few lines open. Obviously, it's a little bit later as we're doing this live, so a little slow on the phone line. So if you want to call now, you can do so without a busy signal and get in line. 403-240-4444. Text lines open at 960-960. Let's go back inside the Flames locker room. Check in with number 91. Here is Nazem Kadri post-game following a 4-2 loss in Vancouver.
Just start with how you see this game kind of develop. It looked like you had some chances, obviously been very early, but maybe just from your perspective.
Yeah, I thought we fought hard. To the end, obviously, there's a couple plays in there that kind of decide the game, and you know, we'd like back, but we fought hard, and we gave it a good effort tonight.
What about the power play? Obviously, they get one kind of late stages, but what did you see on your two opportunities?
Lots of chances, you know, just, you know, a tip away from executing. So, you know, I like the way we moved around today. Had a few opportunities. Unfortunately, couldn't get one.
Did you guys really control the play there in the third down one before they got that power play? How were you able to keep pressuring them?
Just continue to play how we played. I thought, you know, for the most part, you know, we played a pretty solid 60 minutes. Obviously, they're a talented team, took advantage of a couple mistakes. And, you know, we hit a couple posts, and, you know, they just went post out today.
What'd you make of Zary's return to the lineup on your mind?
Yeah. He was obviously, you know, he's good. A little rusty, which is expected, coming back from a little injury. So, you know, more reps he gets, the higher the pace will be, and, you know, he should be good to go.
Quick turnaround, obviously, knowing Buffalo's sitting there waiting as well. What about the mindset and reestablishing things again here tomorrow?
Yeah, just reset, opportunity to put 2 points in the bank. So, obviously, not the most ideal conditions and scenario, but, you know, we'll be ready to play.
That is Nazem Kadri post-game on the road in Vancouver. Your final score, the Flames fall 4-2 to the Vancouver Canucks on this Saturday. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on your Flames Talk post-game show. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. It is time to select tonight's player with heart, brought to you by HeartFit Clinic. It was a rough game, and it was a night where there were definitely some players who struggled for the Flames. But you know, I actually thought that Daniil Miramanov had himself a pretty nice game, and was decent at 5-on-5, and looked decent on the power play as well. Miramanov was a 63.9% possession player on that pairing with Mackenzie Weegar tonight. Outperformed his zone start, which was 53.3%. Flames were 67.9% expected goals when he was on the ice. And individually, Miramanov was a shot attempt machine. He finishes second on the team in this game with 7 shot attempts. He was tied for the team lead with 3 shots on goal. He led the team with 4 scoring chances, and also one of those chances was a high danger chance. Miramanov played 24:49 in this game. They are feeding him ice time right now. I like Miramanov tonight. It feels like maybe there's something there in the player they got back in the Hanifin trade, and they definitely are giving him every opportunity to prove that right or wrong. Daniil Miramanov is your player with heart tonight, brought to you by HeartFit Clinic. For HeartFit assessments and proven treatments not available at your doctor's office, visit heartfit.ca. Not a ton of time for the Flames to dwell on a 4-2 loss in Vancouver, because they're right back at it on Sunday night when they take on the Buffalo Sabres for a 7 o'clock face-off at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Okay, this is your Flames Talk post-game show on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And tonight's game has been brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. Let's go back inside the Flames locker room for a final time. Joel Hanley snapped a 63-game goalless drought with the 4-2 goal in this game. He scored with 20 seconds remaining. It's his first goal as a member of the Calgary Flames. Let's hear from Joel Hanley post-game inside the Flames locker room.
So maybe just first kind of get your kind of assessment of how tonight goes for your group.
You know, I thought we played a pretty solid road game. They're obviously a good team over there, and capitalize on the power play or get a kill there, and you never know. So, but I thought overall we played a pretty good game.
What was it when you look at kind of the game plan going in? We heard about the quick starts, and obviously they got one early, but it seemed like you guys kind of settled in after that.
Yeah. Like you said, they come out hard in this building, and they got a quick one, and then I thought we settled in, played our game. Unfortunately, we weren't able to capitalize on a few of our chances, and it's just unfortunately we couldn't get the dub.
Is this part of the learning experience for this group, just kind of trying to find your way against teams at the top of the standings, knowing that you're going to fight and battle, but just trying to find ways to win the games?
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, we've been playing a lot of good teams, and it's a learning curve, I guess, and we got to find ways to win, and this time it's obviously hard to find those wins, especially when the playoffs around the corner. So I thought overall we played pretty good.
Can you be patient against them, the way they defend? Like, seems like it's hard to force things against that team.
Yeah, they're a good structured team, and they play hard and play fast, and we tried to get pucks behind them and get pucks in the net, and just weren't able to score early.
There you go. That is Joel Hanley post-game. He scored his first goal of the season, first goal as a member of the Flames as part of a 4-2 loss to Vancouver tonight. As we continue along, let's look ahead. The Flames have got a game in less than 24 hours after the game against Vancouver ended, second half of a back-to-back. Looking ahead now, brought to you by Oncolytics Biotech, fighting cancer by unleashing the power of the immune system. To learn more about how they use a patient's immune system to battle cancer, visit OncolyticsBiotech.com. And that game is a Sunday night game against the Buffalo Sabres. It is a 7 o'clock face-off right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. You can watch the game on Sportsnet West, and we'll be on the air at 6 o'clock with your Flames warm-up on Sunday night. Second of two meetings between the Flames and Sabres this season. Calgary took the first one 4-3 back on October 19th on the road, and overall the Flames now 3-1-1 in their last five head-to-head games with Buffalo. That dates back to the 21-22 season, the start of that season, the first real season after the two weird pandemic-affected years. So the Flames play the Sabres at 7 at home on Sunday. Then Monday they will travel. Tuesday they play Chicago at 6:30. Thursday they play St. Louis at 6 o'clock. A stretch of 4-6 started on Saturday against the Vancouver Canucks. That's looking ahead. Brought to you by Oncolytics Biotech, fighting cancer by unleashing the power of the immune system. To learn more about how they use a patient's immune system to battle cancer, visit OncolyticsBiotech.com. As we go back to the text line at 960-960, what do we got here? Starting with this text, not sure who it is from, but if you want to leave your name, you can. You don't have to leave your name. This says, pretty disappointing year for Hanzek. Eh? Yeah, it has been. So as the draft people say, it's the first year after being drafted, it's your draft plus one or your D plus one year. And for Hanzek, who is in his first year as a drafted NHLer or a drafted by an NHL team, rather, it has not been a year that jumps off the page, that's for sure. He had 56 points in 43 games in his draft year. In his draft plus one year so far with the Vancouver Giants, 31 points in 33 games for last year's first-round pick. Now, I do think you have to take into account that there's been a few injuries for Hanzek this year, and those injuries have made it difficult. He started the season injured, so he kind of was behind the eight ball to begin with. I believe there's been another injury in there as well. So it's just kind of been a disappointing year, less about play in my mind and more about just the overall circumstances. It's kind of similar to Jacob Pelche's year, to be perfectly honest. So I still think there's a lot there with Hanzek. I really do. And I think that he is still one of the top 1, 2, 3 prospects in this organization right now. So, yes, his draft plus 1 year, his first year after being drafted, has not been very impressive, and has been frustrating more so due to injuries than anything else. I'm really curious what next year is going to be all about for Hanzek, and I still think that there is a pretty impressive and a pretty exciting package there when it comes to this player. This reads, Carolina's only going to keep one of Brady Shea or Brett Pesce, I'm guessing. The other one any team could get for free July 1st. No assets, just money. They're both 29 years old. And Brady Shea is one of the guys that I personally have identified as a really interesting target for the Flames. I think he'd be a really interesting player for the Flames to go after in unrestricted free agency if, as the texter says, they are unable to re-sign him. I think that in free agency, the Flames need to go out and bring in another defenseman, another guy that can kind of be in that 3 to 5 range, I think would be really important. And I think getting another left shot D would be really important in my personal opinion. That's less important the side the player shoots from, but if it were me, it would be a left shot guy. That's why I really like Shea, who's having a nice year. He's had a career year with the Carolina Hurricanes with 40 points already. I think it'd be a really nice fit. And you know, the one thing the Flames would have, and the other guy that I'm really interested in them going out, he's not a defenseman, but you know, maybe this is the year they go out and they get a guy like they try and get a guy like Anthony Duclair, because we all know there's been this talk about, well, could you get Duclair to play with Huberdeau? I've been against the Flames, especially this season, trading for a guy like that and using an asset, and instead it's been my belief that going and, you know, maybe being able to offer more in free agency than other more, you know, cap-tight teams would be able to do, because the Flames aren't going to have as many cap worries going forward. The Flames aren't necessarily worried about their cap for the next 2 or 3 years, so you could probably give a guy like Shea, you could probably give a guy like Duclair a little bit more in terms of the average annual value, and could give a little bit more in terms of maybe you could offer an extra year than maybe other teams are offering them in free agency. So Shea absolutely is one of those guys I'm super interested in the Flames going after in free agency. Duclair's another one. There's a couple of other defensemen that I think would be interesting targets as well. Because you need transitional players. You do. And especially if the Flames are going to undertake a retool as opposed to a rebuild, I mean, you can't just have young players and young players only. I think it's important to have some transitional players that can help insulate and help bring players along and allow players to play in more sheltered roles as they develop into NHLers. So I think it's important to have some of those transitional players. This reads, Pat, is it true that Pospisil's a natural left winger, even though he plays right wing due to the lack of right wingers on the team? Well, Pospisil's actually a natural center with a left shot. He's actually a natural center iceman. He's played plenty of center in his not NHL career, but in his hockey career. But in the American League, all of a sudden when they moved him to wing, they're like, oh, geez, something pops here. And he's only been a winger at the NHL level so far. He is a left shot playing on the right side, has played the right side before and is comfortable doing so. But yes, he's a natural center, not a natural right winger. And part of the reason he is playing the right side is because they do have a lack of natural right shot right wingers. In fact, in the game today, just off the top of my head, they had Coleman on the right side as a left shot. They had Hunt on the right side as a left shot. And they had Pospisil on the right side as a left shot. The only right winger that they had with a right shot in this game tonight was Kuzmenko. So they continue to be short on... I think Coronado should play the rest of the way. He's a right shot right winger. I think Coronado should be in every single game from here until the end of the regular season. I don't know if the Flames are going to handle their business, go about the way that they, you know, the way that I would go about things. Kevin says Hanzek may be struggling, but Jaden Lipinski has 66 points in 67 games. Absolutely. That would be the teammate of Hanzek with the Vancouver Giants and the fourth-round pick of the Flames at last year's draft. He does 24 goals, 66 points in 67 games. He's really taken a step forward in his draft plus 1 year. So that is a big-time positive. And well said, Kevin. This reads, it's great the Flames are still putting up a fight. However, it's time to focus on the race to the bottom. The glaring lack of high-end talent is obviously not there and is really showing down the stretch. Shifting over to Huberdeau, I've never seen or heard so much pampering of someone who's paid like the best player in franchise history and yet plays like a great fourth liner. With the amount of knives thrown at Gaudreau in past years, who never imploded to this level of production, I just don't understand the constant grace. Whatever the case, for a player who's currently making roughly $200,000 per point, we really should be putting the game on his back each night for that contract. Regardless, going to be tough watching everything play out over the next little while. I don't think that if you're aiming that at me personally, I don't think I'm pampering the guy. I think I've been plenty critical of Jonathan Huberdeau. And honestly, it is at this point, Huberdeau is what he is. In that, at least to this point, over almost two full seasons with the Flames, he has been wildly disappointing and has been shocking how disappointing it's been. However, in the last 30, 35 games, he's been much better than he had been in the prior however many that would be 100-something, 120, 130. So I think Huberdeau has taken some steps, and I do think he is a more offensively dynamic player in the last 30, 35 games than he has been at any point in his Flames career prior. That being said, are we talking about a $10.5 million level of dynamic? No, we're not, and I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat that. We're not. He has not been a $10.5 million player at any point as a member of the Flames. But at the same time, you also have to, at least the way I go about my business is, you also have to recognize when things are better than they were. So I thought that he was one of Calgary's better players in this game. Was he an elite dynamic hockey player in this game? Maybe not. He was one of Calgary's better forwards in the loss against Vancouver, and I think he's been one of Calgary's better forwards over the last 30, 35 games, as I've said. And I think any step forward with how bad things were in the first, however, 100-plus games of Huberdeau's Flames career, I think any step forward is a positive. I don't know if he's ever going to come anywhere close to what that contract suggests that he should be at. I just don't. And you know, I'm probably not very encouraged that it's going to ever be there. But the contract signed. I didn't sign it. You didn't sign it. It has been signed by the Flames and the player. So I do think that any when there are steps forward, I also think it's fair to talk about those steps forward. This says from Chris, good evening, Pat. Boys are out of it. Time to get the young guys, including Wolf, some consistent playing time. The power play is hard to watch. Still waiting on the $10.5 million guy for once to step up to the plate and score a big goal or make a big-time play. On the positive side, they can now hit the golf sims to sharpen up the golf game before the season starts. Yeah, I mean, this Saturday kind of sealed the fate in a lot of ways. You know, when you think about how the standings look now, I mean, they're 12 out, and their elimination number is down to 7.5 or 15 points. I mean, they're 12 out with 13 to go. I think that this one, even if you were still holding on, this one, is there a miracle run? I mean, there's always the potential of a miracle run. Realistically, yeah, it's probably not going to happen. This says on the text line at 96960, it's very clear the Flames aren't close to being on the same level as the Canucks and other elite teams. Do you think they'll use the cap room to go after a big-name free agent this summer? Do I think they'll use some of their cap space in free agency? Yes. Do I think there is a big-name free agent for the Flames to honestly chase and go after this summer that will meaningfully make the type of impact that would get the Flames on the same level as other high-end teams. I don't think that free agent exists. So I don't think the Flames should be overpaying or going, you know, big fish hunting this summer in free agency myself. You know, again, as we talked about, guys like Duclair, guys like Shea or other players like that, that makes sense. But to go and give 7-year contracts and 6-year contracts, no, that doesn't make much sense at all, if you ask me, with where the Flames are right now. Oliver in Beaver Lodge says, Pat, I think the team MVP this year is Kadri. What do you think? I think Markstrom would be team MVP, if you ask me, and Kadri would be number two. Kadri's been dynamite for them all year long and continues to be a really consistent worker, consistent tone setter, and consistent driver for him. So I give Nazem Kadri a ton of credit for what this season's got to be killing him inside. I mean, this guy is driven to win. This guy came here because he thought that there was going to be an opportunity to fight for, you know, playoff round wins and that type of stuff. Hasn't happened, obviously. I do think that this has been very difficult on Kadri, and yet he's done a really nice job of being a consummate pro and still being that tone setter, still being that driver, even as, you know, things get, you know, from inside the locker room, probably get a little bit more frustrating as the year goes along. Players traded away. They're falling farther out of the playoff picture, all that type of stuff. What else we got here at 960-960? Says, Pat, I have to circle back to what Derek said in his post-game reactions regarding the Canucks retool last offseason. While I always appreciate the positivity, it can't be emphasized enough that they do not have a Hughes or a Pettersson. They don't have the elite talent nor the picks to acquire that talent if they continue down this quasi-competitive path. And Derek's point was just that, hey, the Canucks went from being a non-playoff team to a playoff team 1 year to the next, and one of the things they did was acquire Filip Ronek at last year's trade deadline, and he's been a really nice fit. They upgraded their blue line with a couple of other acquisitions, and now look where they are. But, you know, Wilsey also made the point that, look, he prefaced it with saying they don't have Elias Pettersson or Quinn Hughes, and I think that is the most important part. I think the Flames need to figure out a way. I think the number one priority, but also the biggest challenge for the Flames over the next 3-4 years is finding new cornerstone pieces and finding a player or two to truly build around. They got to find their Elias Pettersson and their Quinn Hughes. And you know what? Maybe Hunter Brustevich is that as the defenseman. We don't know yet. But they need to find a center who is anywhere, you know, draft age, anywhere up to about the age of 22, 23, that they can really start to build around and say, that is our number one center of the future. That's a guy that we're building around. And they need to find that number one defenseman. They said, that is the guy that we're building around. And maybe they've got it with their goaltender. Maybe it is Dustin Wolf, and that would be awesome. And I think there's a potential that that could be. You know, I think the other thing that texter didn't point out, and that I think sometimes gets lost in the Canucks conversation, is that there's a third member of that, I think, core group that helped them turn it around so quickly, and that would be Thatcher Demko. I know Demko is hurt right now, but Thatcher Demko could win the Vezina Trophy this year. And so when you've got a cornerstone at each position, Demko, Hughes, and Pettersson, or at each, you know, group, goaltender, defense, forward, and obviously when we're talking forward, we're usually talking center iceman. You can build around that, and you can really start to pay dividends. Well, now the Flames have got to do that. So maybe they've got it in Wolf. And now it's about defense and that center iceman. That's going to be the biggest challenge. It is not easy. Don't get me wrong. It's way easier said than done. But Craig Conroy's biggest challenge and number one priority is going to be to target that as we move towards, you know, the opening of a new arena, so on and so forth. This reads, tomorrow's game's the battle for the 10th overall pick. And finally, this says, Pat, wouldn't it be better to send some of the young players to the Wranglers to help them clinch a playoff spot and play meaningful games? I think there's a balance there. I do. I think that a guy like Coronado, first of all, the Wranglers are going to make the playoffs. I don't think there's really all that much worry about them missing the playoffs. So the, you know, in that respect, I think that you don't have to worry too much there. However, I do playoffs. Having guys like Coronado, Pelche, and some of the other guys they might recall, I think for the playoffs is going to be important. I think there are a couple of guys. Coronado is one of them. Pelche in a little bit's another that I think could really benefit from playing NHL games down the stretch going into the off season. And as much as the Wranglers are important, I think that getting these guys NHL reps between now and the end of the regular season is more important because they're going to be big parts of the Flames going forward. So I think there's a balance to strike there. I think with Coronado, though, I think this is just my opinion. I think Coronado should be up the rest of the year and should play every game between now and the end of the regular season. I really do. And then he can go to the American League and play Wranglers playoff games and finish the regular season. I think they have one or two regular season games after the Flames are done and then the playoffs. So I think Coronado should play 13 of 13, then go back to the Wranglers and finish the season with however deep they go. Pelche, maybe you keep him in the American League a little while longer, and maybe it's the last seven games that Pelche plays or something like that, and then same thing goes back to the American League. Certain guys aren't eligible to play in the AHL playoffs. Pospisil's not eligible, and Zeri is not eligible. Wolf is. He'll go back down there as well, but that would be how I answer that question. It's a fair one, though, at 960-960. Okay, great stuff on the text line tonight. We got two more phone calls to get to following a 4-2 loss in Vancouver. This is your Flames Talk postgame show on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. My name is Pat Steinberg. Let's say hello to Bryce. What's going on, Bryce?
Oh, not too much. How are you?
I'm okay, man.
Yeah, Nate's game, I thought their effort was good. It's just right at the start, they kind of, I guess, I don't know, a week off or something, sometimes that does happen.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that played a part in it, Bryce. I do. They seemed flat-footed and caught off guard by a high-end hockey team in the first 5 or 6 minutes. I mean, honestly, it could have been like 3 or 4 nothing in the first 5 minutes. It was 1-0 48 seconds in. It could have been worse. And Markstrom made a couple of stops, and the Canucks missed a couple of opportunities. But, I mean, this thing could have been over in the first 5 or 6 minutes. And they did. And they you know what? They talked about being ready. They talked about getting off to a good start, and they still fell behind. And then you're chasing, and then they were down 2-0. It's a tough way to play, and, you know, a lot of times you're, as much as the Flames have been the comeback kids this year, a lot of times when you don't come all the way back, right?
Yeah. And then not only that, they don't have the scorers as Vancouver has thought. Like they say, a rebuild, and like you said, they need to go after the cornerstone. If they do it right, then don't panic. If the things are going good, and then start trading everything off. But they just need to fix it and be patient with it.
Agreed. I think they will. I think that is very much part of kind of the plan here.
That's good. No, it's good to hear that. And also, when do you think, Pelche, will he get an opportunity pretty soon, or is that going to be like next year? Do you think?
Well, I don't know, Bryce. I think he should. I would like to see him finish the year in the NHL.
I do too. It's more experience, more better the young guys they get, but depending on how they look at it, I guess, how they practice, how they...
Yeah, and I mean, I actually think some time in the American League in the immediacy, so like, you know, in the next week or two, I think keeping him in the American League, getting him a few other games, will be good, and then maybe it's the last six or seven games of the regular season that he comes back up and plays with the Flames. That's how I would do it. Because I think getting into the American League, getting some, you know, getting some more high leverage time, and maybe getting some offense going, I think that could absolutely work wonders for a guy like Jacob. And then maybe with a week and a half, 2 weeks to go in the regular season, you recall him and he finishes the year with the Flames. That's kind of what I'd be thinking myself. Because I understand why he's in the American League. I understand why they made that call. The Wranglers lost on Friday night 2-1 in overtime on the road in Ontario. Pelche did have his first point on this reassignment in the game. They play again on Sunday. So maybe you do two, three or four or five more games. And I'm just going to quickly look. So the Flames finished their season on April 18th, Bryce. And the Wranglers have two games at the end of the season. So, you know, maybe you recall Pelche again sometime in early April. You let him play the last few games in the NHL with the Flames. Then you get him down for one or two of the regular season games to wrap up with the Wranglers, and then he plays some playoff AHL hockey after that.
Yeah, no, that I think that would be good too. And maybe one more thing. I get to see them when they're in Abbotsford, the Wranglers, because I got two tickets to go see them. It's like get to see them in person down here, see the new guys.
But, nice.
And then that Gretsch, that guy they got from Dallas. Do you think his time will be like next year too? That Grokkerwitz, whatever his name is.
Grushnikov. He is. I mean, he's still young, Bryce. He's still 20, defensemen take a little bit longer sometimes. So I could he be one of those guys that maybe gets a game or two at the NHL level this year? Sure, and I'd be interested in seeing that. But you know, I don't even know if next year full-time NHL would be what the Flames are looking at. I mean, it might be a 2-year thing that we're talking about there.
Okay. It's pretty well it. And then one more, maybe Dustin Wolf. Do you think, like they said, like you said, they have to balance this, but do you think if they like say give him like half and then Markstrom the other half, and then would that do him good? Then he gets more confidence.
I think so they got 13 games left. I think if they give Dustin 7, that would be a really solid number. Remember, he's going to go back and play American League playoffs.
Yeah,
so I don't know if you – like, I think you want to take that into account. Markstrom is a competitive guy and wants to play too. So I think there's 13 to go. If Dustin gets 7 and Markstrom gets 6 of the final 13, I think that would be a really nice split.
Yeah, it'd be good for his confidence, I would think.
For sure.
And spirit, too, because of what's happening.
Yeah.
But anyway, you take care, and I still have memories from when I was in Calgary. Maybe 1 year my wish is I can go to one of their games, because I'm on disability, and you know, I love the Flames dearly. And 1 year. And about an expensive trip to get from here to there. 1 year.
Yeah, and that'd be awesome. I'm glad you enjoyed it here so much.
I did. It was the first time I'd actually seen most of it.
Nice.
I was in there once before, but that was like the year that was centuries ago, it seemed. But yeah. It was nice.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you can get back here one day soon, Bryce.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I'll still keep talking to you.
Yeah, keep calling, my guy. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, buddy. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, bye.
That'll do it on the phone lines tonight following a 4-2 loss to the Vancouver Canucks for the Flames as we start to move towards the conclusion of our Flames Talk post-game show. Thank you for all your texts. Thank you for all your phone calls on this Saturday night as we get to tonight's final summary as Vancouver never trailed in this one tonight. They opened the scoring just 48 seconds in on a Nils Höglander goal. Hoglander made it 1-0 Vancouver with his 21st of the year. Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland the assists, and Vancouver led 1-0 after 20. They go up by a 2-0 score on a clean-cut breakaway from Hoglander. He makes a beautiful move to make it 2-0 at 8:16. Hoglander's second of the night, 22nd of the year from Pettersson and Garland, and the Canucks had a 2-0 lead. Flames got one back in the latter stages of the second, though, as Rasmus Anderson cut the lead in half to make it 2-1. Anderson's eighth of the year, also snapped a 26-game goalless drought for him. A.J. Greer, Kevin Rooney the assist at 18:31, and it was 2-1 Vancouver after 40 minutes of play. Vancouver did a nice job of shutting things down in the third, didn't allow much of anything, and they put this one away on the power play with less than 4 minutes to go. J.T. Miller hits the 90-point plateau with his 34th of the year at 16:42. Miller from Brock Besser and Quinn Hughes on the power play to make it 3-1. Then former Flame Elias Lindholm would seal this into an empty net with his 14th of the year. Lindholm, unassisted at 18:50, made it 4-1. 50 seconds later, Flames got one back. Joel Hanley's first as a member of the Flames made it 4-2. Hanley from Braden Pahal and Greer at 19:40 got us to our 4-2 final score. Final shots were 26-24 in favor of Vancouver. Flames finished this game 0-2 on the power play. The Canucks go 1-3 with the man advantage. Your three stars tonight in the building. Number three was Connor Garland. Number two, Elias Pettersson. And with a couple of goals, the number one star tonight of this game was Nils Hoglander. With the loss, Flames fall to 33-31-5. They're back in action on Sunday, tomorrow, at home to the Buffalo Sabres, while Vancouver improves to 45-18-8. They're back in action Monday at home to Los Angeles. That is your final summary. And now for everyone involved in Flames hockey tonight, for our broadcast crew of Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson, and for our outstanding producer, Shan Vergie. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up on our Flames Talk post-game show, which is available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Next up is that game Sunday night against the Sabres at the Scotiabank Saddledome. It's a 7 o'clock face-off. 6 o'clock Calgary Flames warm-up is when we will hit the air on Sunday. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your weekend. Your final score from Rogers Arena in Vancouver. Flames fall 4-2 to the Canucks. This has been your Flames Talk post-game show, available wherever you get your podcasts. And this has been Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.